What we are at the core is a financial market infrastructure. We basically connect issuers and investors, offering a wide range of services to all this community, but most importantly, bringing all the market liquidity and secondary the market and a wide range of offering, including funds and all kind of service.
Welcome to Chief Digital Heroes, where we celebrate those who lead the charge on all things digital transformation at the world's most innovative banks and financial institutions. Here's your host, Matthew Van Niekerk, CEO and founder of Settlement. Now, let's jump right into today's episode.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of Chief Digital Heroes. Today, I'm speaking with Jorgen Oakman, who is the Group Head of Innovation and Digital Assets at Euroclear. So, Jorgen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Really, I'm very happy to be here, Matthew.
Good. So just from your background, when we were talking earlier, you've gone from retail banking to M&A to innovation. Can you tell me a bit more about that journey and a little bit more about yourself, your background, and how you came into the current role that you have?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It has been an interesting journey, and it all started with a mistake. I actually got in the wrong interview room, and that's a true story. My background, you know, is surprisingly from legal. I have a PhD in law. And I was applying for a job in CIB at the time, and I got into the wrong interview room. And this is how the short version of how I ended up in retail. And I believe that was one of the best decisions I ever made because, you know, at the time I was working in France for BNP Paribas for more than 16 years. Retail was half of the business income of the bank. So understanding what the client is, being close to the client and the network, the commercial role, that was actually very key. But very quickly, I decided to move to something more international. And I still stick with the international retail business part of it and mainly dealing with everything around M&A, restructuring and opening new kind of ventures. And I was lucky to do that in Turkey, in Ukraine, in Poland. And my last job before joining Morocco was being CEO of 20s of BNP Paribas in Morocco, one that we built from scratch, paying service provider. And another one was Digital Factory trying to create digital ecosystem, a B2C digital ecosystem that wasn't existing at the time and using that as a local innovation hub for the group. And I somehow decided to move from the operational M&A part because I often said I was fed up merging small inefficient bank into much bigger, much more inefficient bank. And then I really took a turn towards digital innovation. And one of my colleagues who worked with me on this Moroccan project was recruited by Euroclear. And he called me and said, Jorgen, listen, it's an amazing group. You should come. There's a lot to do in innovation. And that's how I joined my current position. And it's fair to say that when I joined Euroclear 3 years ago, the innovation role, as it was defined as really evolved and is now much wider. And we even have a new purpose around innovation that applies to all the 5,000 employees. Our company purpose now is we innovate to bring safety, efficiency, and connection to financial market, and of course, for sustainable economic growth.
Okay. Yeah, maybe just for any of the listeners that are not familiar with Euroclear, can you maybe explain what Euroclear does and how they fit into the financial markets?
That's most probably the most challenging question. So yeah, trying to explain Euroclear to the people that are not used to it is most probably one of the most challenging questions. What we are at the core is a financial market infrastructure. We basically connect issuers and investors, offering a wide range of services to all this community, but most importantly, bringing all the market liquidity and secondary market and a wide range of offering, including funds and all kind of service. The most important thing is to understand the scale we have, because often, you know, it's a well-known post-trade. So we basically operate after the trade has happened. And to give you the size of our business, we hold in custody more than 36 trillion of euro of assets. That's such a quadrillion operation a year. And we have more than the world GDP on our books every month. So it's pretty sizable, I would say.
Yeah, that's, thanks for kind of putting it in perspective about how essential Euroclear is to capital markets infrastructure. I also was not aware there were that many zeros behind or that many zeros on the balance sheet of Euroclear. So interesting to actually hear that and understand really how big the scope is. And as the head of innovation and digital assets, what did the typical day look like for you?
You know, the easy answer is to say that there's no typical day. But if you allow me, I would rather talk about what I like in a typical week.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know, as innovation, I think what is important, you know, is if I don't have client interaction in a week, If I don't have brainstorming session around initiative, if we don't help to deliver a new project, I'm missing something. So it's all trying to connect the dots. And often we say in innovation that we have three big missions. We engage, we inspire, and we deliver. So yeah, I need all pieces of that in a week. Engaging with the team, cross-collaboration across all the functions, and most importantly, co-creation and getting feedback from clients.
Yep. And that co-creation, because yeah, obviously in an innovation department, there's going to be a lot of co-creation. You do that a lot with external parties as well, like with your clients or with others. What does co-creation, how does that manifest itself within your career?
You know, we make a lot of difference between invention and innovation. Invention is a creative process and innovation is a productive process. So invention can be going to the moon. And innovation can be creating the rocket that is going to bring you to the moon. And each stage is important because at one part, you foster creativity. That's very important. You need to prove the value. You need to build a concept. You need to make sure that you have some market fit. And then, you know, MVP and go to market. So I would say every stage is important. And we interact with our clients all along the way. And when it comes to digital assets specifically, there's a lot of, you know, of importance on making sure that what you do, we have adoption.
Yeah.
Without adoption, it's not going to be used. And innovation for us is taking an idea, bringing it to life, putting it to production for it to be of use for the people in our ecosystem. So the clients and external parties are all across the value chain and the innovation funnel.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that. And my next question was going to be about the responsibilities in your role, but I think you partially answered that maybe, and your responsibilities then to take the work with clients and external stakeholders, also internal stakeholders to co-create. That's more, I think that in your definition would fit kind of in that early phase is more the invention part and then going from that invention or that concept into something that can be put into production. So I guess, does that summarize what your responsibilities are, get those things going and make it happen?
I would go back to what I told you at the beginning around we engage, we inspire, and we deliver. And I think that, you know, in each of these three buckets, you have a critical role to play. And when you're dealing with innovation, you can look at being like trying to push boundaries, having to implement cutting edge tech, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you do things that actually matters and they are going to be useful ecosystem. So we have to understand that we are in a very particular business. That's number one. Number two, that we have to do things that our client can actually adopt and digest and will see the value in it. And so it's quite interesting to be in a push and pull mode with our business line. We take the inside, the outside in view about what's happening, and we try to push some ideas and see what's going to be the traction of that. And we take as well a lot of intake from our business lines to tell us, well, this is the feedback of the client. This is what we know as experts in our field about what's needed and how can we kind of apply it in both. And I would say that the typical responsibility goes from engaging with people, fostering a culture of innovation and collaboration, inspiring people with what's happening outside, with innovative talks, with actually answering challenging questions, all this ideation that we bring, hackathon internally that we do, and all the delivery part. And when it comes to delivery, we see ourselves as like doctors. Come whenever it hurts. Should it be during the ideation phase? Is it during the delivery? Is it trying to align people? And we don't say we have all the solution internally, but thanks to our networks and to the toolkit that we develop internally, we are able to support you and find the right people and the right solution to basically help you advance whatever the roadblock you're having. And sometimes on a specific phase and sometimes end-to-end project.
Okay. Looking at the digital transformation and innovation process, I'm just going to ask a question about the stage of digital transformation at Euroclear. Do you see that as a spectrum or how do you view where Euroclear would fit on a digital transformation journey if it's from the start to finish?
We'll tell you something. Euroclear is a company that is 5 or 6 decades old. And what is interesting to understand is that an FMI like us have been here to support the growth of the capital market throughout any kind of innovation, technological, financial. When you look at how we facilitated the Eurobond market, when you look at the internet, digitalization, cloud, now DLT, AI, whatever, FMIs are a steady place where innovation takes place, most often in a silent way. But as I told you, and when you look at the size of what we do, we are digital by nature now. We process 1 quadrillion operation a year. That's if we are not digital, then we would need more than an army to be able to process everything. And what takes some time is every time you have a break in the system or something like that, you require manual processes. This is where it gets complex, not only for us, but for the full market. But I would say we have been on a digital journey since our creation, and it's only accelerating today.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And given that, yeah, as you said, if everything wasn't fully automated and digital, then there's no way you'd be able to, the organization would be able to cope with the amount of volume. So that, I think that's
don't get me wrong. I think the way the capital market has been built, and I'm fairly new to this, it bears still a lot of inefficiencies. We are living in a sequential value chain where everyone has somehow to reproduce, reconcile, and make all the checks left and right. And we haven't moved yet to a concept of a golden source where everyone could rely on one and a source of data that can be disseminated to everyone at the same time. And that would avoid all this sequential value chain and move more to a circular value chain. And we aspire to become the change agent that is going to support this market transformation from the sequential to the more circular mode. But still, we are very digital by nature, but the processes sometimes, not at your clear level, but the capital market level, are still very sequential, and there is a lot of room for improvement there.
Yeah, I just think it's, having myself worked in the capital markets in the past, you know, you have settlement times in T+3 or T+2 for very liquid assets. And then if you take illiquid assets, it might be 1 week, T+3 week. And it kind of begs the question, of course, like when I actually, back in 2015, while I was still working at a bank, there was a study put out by Euroclear, and I asked to get the law firm that was involved, but it kind of painted a picture of how DAT would fit. It's really impressive that Euroclear spotted way back then in 2015, was able to already articulate how this technology could be implemented for capital markets. And I guess today, the realization of that vision, and not today, but today and tomorrow, if I can put it that way, that future capital markets where the need for reconciliation has been moved, if we're all working, like you said, that the golden post and truth, that seems to be the future in terms of efficient capital market and where we're headed. That's maybe a bold statement, and it doesn't happen overnight, but
it is. Having worked in other banks and being in the financial market infrastructure, I think that the game is totally different. The size and the impact of what you do actually is 10x bigger than anything else I've seen in my previous experiences. And it goes with the pace of change, it goes with our regulatory environment, it goes with the market adoption. And we have to have all this component in mind whenever we try to do innovation to make sure that we are not going too far, too fast, at a pace that the market cannot cope with. And we have seen some examples there, or we are not in the business as well of doing innovation for innovation, putting out great tech stack out there, but there is actually no users. We do things in a safe and gradual way, still helping the capital market to progress. But, you know, always, that's why we go back to the client's feedback. We're a very client-centric organization, and we do things that are going to be used. Sometimes it looks more vanilla than it is, but actually the scale we bring and the network we have, it actually can make things move forward much faster. And the DLT journey has been quite impressive. And it comes at the moment where you have as well three key components. You have market readiness. Everyone has been trying in the market when you take all the value chain, operations, issuance, settlement, collateral, payments, have been trying to do stuff. They are often very successful, meaning they have found a real problem. They have a great solution to it. It's working, but it's sometimes small, still siloed, definitely not connected or interconnected, and are facing a lot of challenges to grow. And we believe FMI can play a key role here in actually bringing that to the next level. When you look at central banks and regulators, the work they have been doing on central bank digital currencies and creating all the specific framework like the EU pilot regime or the digital sandbox in the UK and in other geographies as well, they have been putting a specific focus on DLT and digital asset, allowing new entrants, fintechs, global financial institutions to actually test different kind of model with exemptions. And on top of that, sometimes when you're innovation, it's sometimes a difficult statement, but it's better to be the second or smart follower than to be the first one, and because you get more learnings. And that's why we are very open to share a lot what we have learned, because we have benefited that as well, a lot from the learnings in the market.
Yeah. All right. Great. And of course, we can talk for hours about DLT and blockchain and stuff like that. But I want to take a bit of a broader view because you're also not, you're looking at digital assets, but it's in the innovation process, be looking at a lot of different technologies that are in the process of emerging, going from nascent to prevalent. Which technologies are you most excited about?
I would say all of them, to be honest, because first of all, we owe it to the market participant to have a look at it. Then we need to make an informed decision about what impact it has for our clients, for our business, for our organization. And then we decide how we go to market. And to be honest, it starts to become a challenge. If you look back, the way most of the big banks have been built is you invest a lot of money in infrastructure and it lasts for decades. Now you still invest a lot of millions and the technology might not last for 2 years. On top of that, we have to recognize there is an internal channel for most of the organizations. Okay, what's happening? And the risk of being a bit unpopular, I have sometimes the feeling we're getting to a fashion week mode. Like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, everything was ESG. See that everywhere. Then obviously it's an important topic. 1 year ago, 2 years ago, it was all DLT and now it's all AI. And next year it's going to be something else. And we need to still priorities clear. And to stay focused, because previously we were able to cope with change and innovation because we had some time to adapt to it together with the market. Now, if you have significant innovation and disruption every 6 months, it's being a challenge for the participants, for the infrastructure, for the players. So we need to keep a certain balance in all that. And fair to say as well that regulation plays a key role as well in what our license to operate doesn't say.
Yeah, and I think looking at the pace of technological innovation and new technologies that come up, I think where we'll see, and we're already starting to some extent, but like each of these technologies can be quite disruptive standalone. But at the crossing point where AI and blockchain are working in tandem, or AI, blockchain, and IoT are coming together, and I don't even want to think about what quantum adds to that equation, but I think there's a combination of these things, and we're seeing it like in AI where BLT is used to secure information proof provenance of data that goes into an AI model. And AI can be used to detect anomalies in blockchain-based data and all kinds of stuff. So I think it must be exciting, at least that's exciting for me, to look at the cross points and the intersections where these technologies go from like independently destructive to collectively, I don't know what.
Well, Matt, you actually are spot on. Because let's forget about this data a second and go back to innovation. When you look at what allowed Uber and other platforms to grow, it's basically the combination of things that were working quite well. Thanks to Google Maps, thanks to payments, and thanks to taxi drivers, you put a combination of all that together, you get the much better client experience. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You just have to create the right combination of things existing to get something that is so much better. Waze, for example, is info traffic and geolocalization. You put all two together, boom, we get something that is amazing just by combining ideas together. So I'm fully with you on this point that all of these ideas brings value. We actually have developed products in production, delivering AI already 2 years ago, allowing you to predict settlement fails, which is a big topic in capital market. Yeah. We have launched our DLT platform in production, allowing you to do a native digital issuance. So we continuously deliver on new technology and new solution that provides value to the market and with a level of adoption that is here because that's being co-created with the market. But the combination of two great ideas can make something much bigger, and we obviously are looking at that.
Yeah. All right, good. And can I zoom into a little bit, if I can, where we'll come back to the role that you have. And I really would like to get your insights. You know, a lot of our listeners are aspiring to be digital leaders. And I think it'd be interesting, if you don't mind, to share, what do you see as the top skills and qualities required to be a leader in an innovative, in an innovation leadership role?
I think there's a strong need to have a strategic vision. And we need to be able to adapt to everything almost at any time, because there's always something happening. And then you need to prioritize and understand the consequences, as I said, for the business, for the clients, for the organization. So the strategic thinking is very important. And as well, you have to have a culture of collaboration. At the end of the day, it's really fostering this innovation culture and the culture of collaboration that sometimes might be a bit difficult, complex, or big organization, because whether we like it or not, you still have what we call silos. And you have to be able to break the silos and go through that and make everyone come together if you want to have an end-to-end vision. And then what we're trying to avoid is to have what we call innovation theater, meaning you do a lot of noise, but you actually don't deliver on much. We'd rather have fewer projects, but actually delivering more. And we need to find the right balance between pushing cutting edge advancements, client adoption, and as well as regulatory compliance.
Yeah. Can I ask a question then? Just going to double click on something. You mentioned that it's better to have fewer projects. I don't know if it's still, I haven't read innovation management literature in the last couple of years, but when it was in the past, you know, I had the role of platform innovation at a bank, and what the mantra that was predominant at that time is like, okay, do a lot, but fail bad. When you have lots of ideas and set up experiments, and maybe your success rate of an experiment going into something productive use is like 10%. But do you take that kind of an approach, like innovate modestly or like come up with lots of ideas, but be ready to fail fast? Is that still part of the way that you think about innovation? And
I think it's still valid. But if you allow me to go back a few years ago, when you had an idea, that's why you always have a light bulb on the slide of innovation somewhere. And then you didn't want to share it with anyone. Like, I hold, this is gold. I cannot share it because the idea has value. And today you live in a world where we are most blinded because of all the light bulbs. There are even websites giving you $1 billion ideas. It's not about the idea anymore. It's about how you deliver on it and the value it brings and the adoption. And when you look at the theory of innovation, most of it around design thinking and all the traditional innovation, they have been developed 2 or 3 decades ago. And yeah, we're still using them. I think it's time to refresh that a little bit. So obviously, it all depends what you call fail fast. Yes, yeah, fail fast is important because avoid cost, loss of resources, etc. But that's what you could pull for value. The more you're able to pull the value of your idea, the more it allows you to invalidate some hypotheses and basically decide to move forward, to pivot, to stop, to move to the next one. But we have an education role in terms of the company. We need to foster the spirit of innovation, creativity, allow people to come up with ideas, and then guide them through the process. And sometimes we have to share honest feedback about, okay, what are the chances, how much you want to be involved, and end of life of an idea. But the funnel will always be at the beginning, and then, you know, end up, but still valid, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the thing you mentioned about like the literature for design thinking and things like that. It's a bit of, could be a bit outdated. And at the beginning of the podcast, you mentioned, I think very briefly, the toolkit that you use. Is that toolkit then the updated version, or is that?
But it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not because it's vintage that it's not good. And you can always go back to the innovator's life. And I think this book will always remain relevant in its key lessons. Why most successful companies fail in the face of disruptive innovation? How can you basically, and when you look at the Fortune 500, look at, there are videos on YouTube telling you, showing you how the most successful companies that were in the list 10 years later are not in the list anymore. How can you be the number one and then suddenly disappear? And that's something we try pushing an organization, and we are very lucky because at Euroclear, basically we were finding a balance between both. We are basically needing to answering continuous innovation, sustaining innovation, meaning we keep doing things better. But at the same time, when we started the DLT project, we're happy. It was a challenge. There was not necessarily client demand at the time. There was no proven backup. It was going to be, the product was going to be less good than the normal thing that you could find today. But still, the company went big for it because there is a belief on it, because the cost of not doing might be much bigger than the cost of investing and failing.
Yeah, I understand that. We talked about a lot of companies are challenging the ROI on investments being made. And the, I guess, as you said, the other side of that is, what is the cost of not doing this year? That's not a return on investment. That's like a negative return on status quo or something like that.
But don't forget that we are a financial market infrastructure. So it gives us this very specific position. There are things we need to do because of our DNA. And of course, we are looking at return on investment, obviously for our clients and our shareholders, but at the same time, for our infrastructure as well. And there is always a part of R&D that needs to be developed, and nobody can be successful every time. But that's why we focus on value creation from the beginning with clients.
Yeah. So in your role, are there any challenges that you, what do you find challenging in your current role? Anything that you'd like to call out?
Well, I would go back to finding the right balance between pushing cutting edge technology and solution together with the regulatory compliance and the pace the market could actually adopt the solutions.
Yeah.
And that's something that is important. You need to push innovation involves exploring new tech and new solution and pushing boundaries to stay ahead. always with the client and corporation. And recognize that the financial sector is as well heavily regulated. And we need to think out of the box, that's what we say often. What do you do when the limit is the box?
Yeah. But I think what I'm taking away from our conversation is that there are lots of challenges for FMIs. But I think that, Jürgen, you really enjoy those challenges and finding the path to get through it. As that challenge becomes a joy in a way, but maybe frustration at times, but I think it must be a big challenge and you seem to enjoy it.
I did.
And looking at your role, you're in innovation, digital assets, touching a lot on DLT. What are some misconceptions about, or have you come across any misconceptions about what you do in your role as the head of innovation and digital assets?
There's a traditional misconception that if you don't wear sneakers and don't have loads of post-it, you're not doing innovation. I think hopefully the level of maturity has gone above this cliche. But I think that if I had to summarize the one challenge, consider innovation as a one-off. It's not a one-off. It's a journey. And that's the most important thing. Like, okay, we did an innovation project and it stops there. Absolutely not. So you plant the seed, you can see it grow, but the work is far from being finished. But it doesn't mean that innovation has to own it, but we always take a look and to do improvements and basically making sure the company adopts a new mindset, always looking forward, keeping a focus on what matters today, not missing out on what is important for tomorrow, and always keeping us relevant for the ecosystem and our clients.
Yeah. Okay. You're dropping a lot of knowledge and insights for the audience. So thanks a lot for that. Now, I want to maybe not looking at the role now, but are there projects or initiatives that you're working on? Like, there was an announcement on Monday as well. And can you maybe shed a little light on what initiatives you're involved in? And if you want to talk about what was announced on Monday, then please feel free to do so.
Yeah, sure. So as I said, we do a lot of ideation internally and hackathon, and we're working on ESG topic, climate, transaction monitoring and AI. But we recently announced one big project around DLT. So as I mentioned earlier, we have developed digital issuance platforms for Eurobonds. Some specificities, because it's a platform that should be CSDR compliant. And that allows basically to connect both of both worlds. Because today you might have platforms that are doing end-to-end, but there is limited adoption. So we basically collected a lot of feedback from the market, and we developed only the part that mattered where we would have adoption today. And that's the primary market distribution. So issuers today have an optionality, thanks to Euroclear, to issue on DLT with real DVP, public settlement, cash on chain, and move all that to our legacy system and not have to compromise at all on liquidity. And from the investor point of view, they would be able to buy these digitally native issued assets without any friction compared to the way they do it today. Yeah. So it looks vanilla, but it's vanilla for a reason. Everyone likes vanilla, and it's the right pace people can adopt actually things today. And no, that's one big thing. And the other one is that we are looking at tokenization. So there's often a misconception that tokenization is only for DLT, while tokenization is just the next evolution of digital. And as I told you at the beginning, we are digital by nature due to the size of the things that we're doing. So having a smarter way to do digital is just part of our natural innovation journey. And we announced on Monday that we are launching a project together with the IFC, one of the largest regional innovation hub, and Julius Baer, our very reputable Swiss bank, to try to kill the challenges of multi-generational inheritance thanks to tokenization. So we are exploring if it can be much better, what it would mean, and how you can actually validate a lot of hypotheses around tokenization, programmability, transfer of ownership, purpose-bound money, and make sure that if you want to transfer assets to a generation that is not even born, you can manage their identity part of it and make sure that if you have some wealth you don't want to be spent in a certain way, you can still manage that while you're living and even after you're gone.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm just going to ask one question or two questions, some of those initiatives, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So with the issuance offering, the first one you mentioned, is that for bonds or for other types of assets?
So we started for Eurobonds.
Yeah.
That's the main asset. But obviously, you can adapt it to any kind of asset class.
Yeah.
But as I said, iterating a lot with the market to understand what would make a difference. And we're very big in the Eurobond space. So it was a natural space for us to start. And I think that when you're starting to accelerate in the DLT journey, finding the right use case that would actually matter and have some adoption is quite critical, because the transformation value of this technology is so big that it can be relevant everywhere, but you still need to find a place to start. And since we're infrastructure, we build the road to do these issuance.
Yeah. And did I hear it correctly? The app, every transaction has more than one leg. So there's the asset itself, whether that Eurobond is a started or something in the future, is cash on chain as well there in that offering?
So that's a very specific setup thanks to Europeer, because we have Europeer Bank that is able to provide cash on chain. So we tokenize the cash that we had. The accounts of our participants, we create security tokens, and we do the DVP on-chain.
Okay.
But there, if you type the FMI in Euroclear, you will get to our website, and you have a full video explaining you end-to-end how that works.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for dropping the URL. I'm sure the listeners would like, some of them would be interested in digging into that and learning more about exactly how it works. All right, Jörgen, thanks a lot for, like, in this podcast, you've provided a lot of insights, knowledge for the listeners, and I really want to thank you for that. But of course, this is pretty much all the time we're going to have for today. If people want to follow you or what Euroclear is doing with innovation and moving along, where can they find you?
So the best way to follow us is through the Euroclear website, euroclear.com, or follow the Euroclear page on LinkedIn. And this is where we communicate the most. Obviously, I have my own profile, but I'd rather have people following Euroclear. And this is where we drop all the interesting news for people to follow.
All right. Oh, David, thanks again so much, Jörgen, for your time. It's been a great conversation here, and looking forward to keeping in touch with you in the future.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Chief Digital Heroes, brought to you by Settlement, the world's leading blockchain transformation platform. To learn more about Settlement or to access the latest episodes, visit settlement.com.